What councils could do in the fight for decent, affordable housing for all? Take on the profiteering social housing bosses. Paul Kershaw, Chair Unite Housing Workers Branch LEN 1111 and Socialist Party. Millions of housing association tenants will receive a higher end bill this April, typically by over 4%. Many will be pushed further into poverty. At the same time, the mainstream news media have been exposing Britain's housing shame, revealing appalling disrepair in housing association properties and the shocking lack of action to resolve problems on the part of associations. ITV News explained that social housing tenants regularly contrast the speed at which their landlords contact them. If their rent is a day late, many have told us they get calls, emails and letters almost immediately. If there has been a problem or delay with the payment, while they wait weeks and months for repairs to be made in their home. Kwajo Twineboa, a 23-year-old campaigner, took to Twitter to describe the terrible conditions on his estate and the battles tenants had with their landlord, Clarion, to get the most basic repairs carried out. He described moving into a flat on the Eastfield estate in Mitcham, South London, which smelled of damp, and was home to a nest of mice in the kitchen. The garden fence was broken, and the back door would not shut. His father became terminally ill with oesophageal cancer, and had to be nursed in a flat with cockroaches, mold and mice. Kwajo took up the problems of other tenants facing bad conditions and his tweets went viral. Members of the Social Housing Action Campaign, SHAC, echo Kwajo's experiences. Groups of residents are organizing in an increasing number of housing associations to fight back, see shaction.org. Tactics have included withholding rent or service charges, to pressurize landlords to do repairs or to correct and reduce service charges. Action taken by SHAC members now extends to over 20 landlords. Some of these campaigns have met with success, demonstrating the power of collective organization. But these battles reveal how many social housing organizations behave like ruthless profit-seeking landlords. Michael Gove used his first Tory conference as Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities to accuse social landlords of presiding over scandalously poor housing conditions. What stunning hypocrisy! The Tories have been in government since 2010, and have drastically cut funding for social housing, deregulated social housing providers, and reduced support for tenants and residents to have a voice in the running of their landlords. Financial interests. There is no doubt about the terrible housing conditions. And there is no doubt that successive Tory governments have prioritized private property and financial interests over people in social housing. Far from standing up for social housing, housing association bosses have been willing accomplices of the government in entrenching financialism. Housing associations generated an overall surplus of £3 billion last year. Since the 2008-2009 financial crash, when some financial giants made a killing, there has been a global wall of cash looking for safe investment opportunities in high-quality collateral, HQC. What we see as homes, finance capitalists see as HQC. The business model of the major housing associations is to tap into this money and offer investment opportunities. Global Finance has been seeking out opportunities in rented housing around the world. In the UK there are moves to invest in for-profit corporate landlords such as Grainger, whose largest shareholder is the US-based BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, with $10 trillion in assets under management. Lloyds Bank plans to go into the market directly as a landlord. Housing association bosses compete in this market for investment. Executive success is measured by their ability to please the financial institutions. Residents come well down the pecking order. Typically, housing associations try to maintain a brand image as socially concerned organizations. But the reality is quite different. This is revealed in their response to the rising number of claims for disrepair. SHAC gained access to leaked management papers for Riverside Housing, revealing that, rather than taking emergency steps to improve repairs, their response was to organize a secret lobbying group to reduce tenants' access to legal support. Secret, because, as they correctly explain, the legislation is designed to protect tenants from irresponsible landlords and unsafe living conditions. Any action to limit their right to hold their landlords to account could be considered as disadvantaging social housing tenants. It could be seen that housing associations are looking to avoid their responsibility to their tenants and allow them to live in unfit homes. Accountability Shack gave evidence on regulation and accountability of housing associations to MPs on the Leveling Up Housing and Communities Committee in January. Speaking for Shack, Socialist Party member Susan Muna made it clear that residents do not feel their voices are heard. At the same meeting, Clarion's boss, Claire Miller, hotly denied that there had been a conscious decision to run down the Eastfield estate, but then admitted that cyclical repairs had been halted in preparation for a delayed regeneration scheme. The problems on the estate came from decisions at the top, not errors by frontline staff. Elsewhere, Clarion residents of Clare House in East London were told they had to move out in October last year because a fire risk had been discovered. For many, it had been their home for decades, and residents are still living in hotels. Residents had raised concerns with Clarion about fire safety since the Grenfell fire. Even after they had been told to move out, Clarion was unwilling to share fire safety information with them on the ludicrous grounds that they would not understand the fire safety reports. If Clarion and other social housing providers were subject to democratic residents' control, they would not be able to get away with decisions like these. A government of the bosses, or austerity-driven councils acting in the interests of corporate landlords, cannot be relied upon to uphold housing safety, standards and affordability. This has been shown most tragically by the Grenfell disaster and subsequent inquiry. In the immediate aftermath of Grenfell, the Official Information Commissioner simply urged housing associations to make safety information fully available to residents, making the excuse that she did not have power over housing associations as private organizations. A local authority, prepared to act in the interests of its working-class residents, could take a number of measures now. Years of council cuts have seen thousands of council workers lose their jobs. A willing council could invest resources to employ environmental health officers, well-resourced and with the objective to uphold safe housing standards as agreed by residents. Council-funded renovations to address urgent safety issues could be carried out immediately. The government's formula for maximum rent increases of inflation plus 1% is typically matched by local councils. To assist tenants facing a cost of living squeeze, councils must freeze social rents. Even Tory-led Wandsworth Council has just taken such a step. Why can't all Labour councils do so too? To tackle social rent increases and service charge hikes in housing associations, councils should refuse to agree planning permission for developments by housing associations and other private landlords who continue to rip off residents. By taking these steps, using financial reserves and borrowing, a council prepared to lead the fight against the government for the required funding would win popular support from residents. Rather than assisting corporate landlords and developers, a socialist council could begin to transform residents' lives. But ultimately, left in the hands of corporate landlords or housing associations in hock to those same corporate landlords and finance capitalists, social housing will continue to be run for profit rather than need. Social housing stock, publicly owned, could be managed democratically by elected committees of tenants and the wider community. By taking over the major housing associations with their vast surpluses, the resources to carry out repairs and fund sustainable development could be made available. Government investment to meet social housing need could be planned on a national basis and executed locally with the democratic oversight of residents.